Sometimes I turn the phone on and off and change it.
My name is Maya Hubble. I'm 38 years old. Today is August 3rd, 2018. And I'm speaking with my mother, whose name is
Patricia Dolan.
And she's a certain amount of years old.
I'm 63 years old.
Okay. Should we start with this one?
We could.
All right. Tell me your favorite memory of me, if you can think of one.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. You know, my memories of each of my individual children are kind of blurred together. So sometimes it's really hard for me to pick out each of you individually.
It might be a memory of a different kid, but that's okay.
There's a picture of us together when we were, I think we were living in off of Jefferson River Road in the trailer. And to me, there were some real special times there, even though it was also some real shadowy times. But I remember just us, that picture is of us looking at a flower together, and you were just about 3 or 4 maybe in that picture. I think probably around 3. And we did that a lot. I mean, we just went out in nature a lot together, and you were like my little fairy girl. So I'm going to cry thinking about it. You were such a little nature girl. And, you know, we would look at the leaves and look at the flowers and the little insects. Or you'd come to me with a frog in your hand, you know, things like that. And it was just so precious. I felt like you were just my kindred spirit like that.
Well, I was, and I still am. I'm still a little nature girl. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
Goodness. I've had a lot of people that have influenced my life, and I'm trying to focus specifically on being a good influence.
Oh, right. You know, yeah, a good influence.
Yeah. Because there's been a lot of bad influences. Hopefully they haven't become too attached to me. Mm-hmm. As far as good influences go, I've had a lot of good influences. I'd say from the beginning, probably a good influence on me when I was younger was my aunt, my mother's sister. And she didn't have any children, so she took on to me like she was my my second mom. And she was a gardener. And so you know, we would go outside and we would, you know, take care. She didn't have a big garden, but, you know, she had little things that she'd grow and little vegetables. And I remember growing carrots with her, and she loved flowers. And so we were always picking bouquets together and stuff. And so that was a big influence on me, just because she was able to be very present. My mother in my childhood was depressed a lot and usually, you know, very busy with all the activities of running a household with all the kids, you know. So not able to be really present with me. But my aunt, you know, she would just be present with me and enjoy me when I was with her.
Aww. What was her name?
Her name, they just called her Auntie. Mm-hmm. Her name is Dorothy. And, she was a smoker. She died of cancer.
Aww.
The last time that I saw her, she was very, very thin. And just before she went in the hospital, I wanted to see her. I was 5 when she died. And I wanted to see her. I wanted to go see her in the hospital. And she spoke German. And she was teaching me German words. And she was teaching me on the phone, even from the hospital. She was saying things in German so that I would, you know, she could see if I remembered them. Mm-hmm. And I went. I begged my mother to take me to the hospital to see her, but my auntie told me on the phone that she didn't want me to see her. She didn't want me to remember her that way.
Aww.
And she told me, one of the last things she said to me was, "Promise me that you'll never smoke."
Aww. Oh, wow.
So whenever I quit smoking as an adult, I always thought of her and pictured her in my mind, you know, and her saying that, and I promised her I wouldn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I picture her, you know, above me saying, "What are you doing to yourself? You promised me you wouldn't do this."
Why did she speak German?
I don't really know.
Do you know much about their heritage?
No, I don't know much about their heritage. I don't know, you know, she wasn't from Germany or anything, you know, she was my mother's older sister. Although some people in the family, there was a rumor that she was actually my mother's mother.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because she was like 20 years older than my mom, and, or 15 years older, she's 15 years older than my mom. And so there was a rumor that the reason why she took my mom on so much when she became older and went off and had children and took my mom's children on so much is because she was really the mother and the grandmother of us. And that she had become pregnant with my mother as a teenager. And so my mother's mother, her mother, Dorothy's mother, pretended like it was her child to raise when it was actually Dorothy who had my mother.
How could you ever find out?
Everybody not know this? Or how could I find out?
Yeah, like, is there a way to still find out? Do you think your brother or sister would know?
See, it's not anything that even my mother knew. This was rumored through the family through... my Aunt Jerry somehow got wind of it through one of the relatives.
Uh-huh.
That she was actually our grandmother and not my mother's older sister. So it's a weird thing. I don't know how I could ever find out now because almost everybody's gone.
So she's the only person that ever mentioned it to you?
Yeah. Jerry, I think, was the only person that mentioned it to me. But Jerry was really good on looking into, you
right.
know, the old, yeah. old stuff. And I wish I asked her a lot more before she passed away. But
yeah.
she was very close. She lived with Auntie and her husband, Uncle, for a while when she left home because my stepfather was so abusive of her.
Right.
So she went and lived with them. And then actually when my father died, we all went to live with Auntie for a little while when my mother recovered from her depression and shock from it.
So you were really close to her, but not your grandma? Not who was supposed to be
she
your
was
grandma?
Dead.
Oh.
My real, who was supposedly my grandma
yeah.
or whatever, was dead. She died when my mother was 15.
Oh, wow.
So I never had a grandparent, a grandmother or a grandfather.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, my whole life. So I think that's
yeah,
kind
me,
of
me
a reason, one of the reasons. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you neither. So I guess it's kind of, you know, and I see how that, I see that element in people's lives, and I'm like, I want to be that, you know, because
yeah.
I feel like it was really an element missing in my life.
Yeah, definitely.
So it brings me great joy, you know, to be a grandmother, you
of
know.
Of course, yeah.
And to have special time with the kids.
Do you know how your grandma died?
I think she had a heart attack.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she had, and she raised her kids. Her husband left her. She raised her kids on her own. She had 7 kids, and her husband just left her with all the kids on a farm in New York, and she had to raise them on her own, like,
wow.
for years on the farm.
Do you know where they came from?
Not really.
Like, were they first generation Americans? Seems like they would have been.
No. All I know is that the origin of the family that came over here was Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah, I just know originally, you know, the family came from Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'd like to know more. So
yeah.
that's one of the biggest influences. And when I was a child, as an adult, I would say some of the biggest influences. Well, as a teenager, most of my influences, I think, not personally, but overall, were. Either authors or musicians,
mm-hmm.
you know, that that influenced me, like certain books, like Autobiography of a Yogi or Siddhartha or Hermann Hesse books, or you know, different spiritual books and E.E. Cummings poetry, you know, Rumi, all that, you know, just really opened my mind.
Mm-hmm.
All the reading, I did a lot of reading as a young adult, and then the music of the times was very, you know, rock and folk, you know, from Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, the Beatles, you know, Joni Mitchell, all that, you know,
mm-hmm.
all those influenced me a lot as an artist, influenced me a lot as a young adult. And then going back to school, I had some fantastic, like, professors when
mm-hmm.
I went back to college
mm-hmm.
that were very influential to me, you know, just kind of gave me hope about the world or humanity,
mm-hmm.
you know. Randy Goodstadt, she did all the feminine history, feminine studies. And then I forget his name. It was this, in English class. He taught all the English classes, and he was, God, I wish I could remember his name. He's a big gay guy. He was just so beautiful and so intelligent and intuitive at the same time. He was very, he really encouraged me to be a writer.
Hmm.
That was, you know, inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's good. This question's kind of like the last one. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
I was very imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
And, I spent a lot of time outside. I would, we had a kind of a big field by our house and woods in the back, and there was cows back there, and there was a farmer next door that had chickens. And so my uncle, my aunt's husband, was a fisherman, and he set lobster traps. So I remember, he'd bring lobsters in, and I never realized that they threw them in boiling water.
Oh, yeah.
And so they were going to do that. We had a stream across the street from us behind my friend's backyard. And I remember running off, very young, you know, running off with a lobster in each hand. You can imagine a little girl picking up a lobster. They looked very intimidating.
Yeah.
And I ran off with a lobster in each hand because once I found out that they were going to be thrown in the boiling water and threw them in the stream. I ran across the street and threw them in the stream.
I wonder if they could survive in the stream.
I don't think so. Of course, everybody was all, you know, outraged in the family because, you know, we were
money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was, like, I think one of the first things that times I realized that, you know, what I was eating was once alive. There were things that I ate that was once alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very young. And then I remember my mother was very compassionate like that. Like, we had lots of cats. And it started off with one cat that somebody dropped off pregnant, and that was the mama cat, and she was a calico, Angora calico. She's beautiful. So she had kittens, and then her kittens had kittens, grew up and had kittens, and so we ended up with so many cats, and people started just dropping off cats at our house that they didn't want anymore. They figured we would notice a few more. And so my mother, you know, she would, you know, get cat food and bring it all. We'd put like three or four big plates full of cat food in the basement and open the back door that was kind of like to the basement, was kind of like in what's that movie? Wizard of Oz, when they open the trap door and they all go down into the basement. It's like this door that you open. It's an old-fashioned door for the basement. And all the cats would run in and eat, you know, in the evenings. And I had a special one that used to sleep with me. I named Thomasina after that movie, Thomasina, the cat with nine lives. And it was my favorite movie as a kid. And so she would sleep with me at night. We all were allowed to have one special cat in our room if we wanted to. Thomasina was my special cat. And I had her for years, and she was very sweet. She'd sleep on my belly. But I was, and so my mom, we would go out, and she was the first one to show me that you could drop breadcrumbs on the anthills, and the ants would come up and get the breadcrumbs and bring them back down. And so we would sit out there and feed the ants, and, you know, the breadcrumbs, and watch the ants gather and bring it back down to their little, you know, their little areas below. So I would be imagining what it was like under there with them giving their baby ants, you know, pieces of the breadcrumbs that we gave them. I mean, even as I got older, sometimes I would do that just to observe, you know, a different life form, you know, and
mm-hmm.
how it acted. So I was always very interested in that. And my mom would feed the wild animals too. You know, she put food out. If we had leftovers or whatever, we'd put it out for the raccoons and whatever. And I remember also, like, the farmer next door, we got baby chicks from him once, and we kept them, and they were so cute, and they were beloved, you know, they were so precious to me. And then my mom said we couldn't keep them anymore, and so I was like, okay, I guess we have to give them back to Rosalie, the Saravolos. And Rosalie was my friend, the Saravolos were the farmers, so... Then I found out that, and then my brother told me, he says, oh my God, do you realize, you know that when we give them back to them, they're gonna let them grow up, and then they're going to chop their heads off.
Oh,
and I'm like, God. He says, yeah, you know they do that up there. They chop their heads off. That's what
Jesus
they do.
Christ.
They eat them when they get big. That's why they let them grow. They let them grow just big enough to eat, and then they chop their heads off. And I'm like, oh my God, no. So I begged and pleaded with my mother, no, you cannot give, we have to keep these chicks. We can't give them back. They're going to chop their heads off. So my mother had to let us keep them. So we kept them for, I think we kept them until they were passed away or whatever. But we had chicks for the longest time. Like, we had three of them that we got to keep. And I had in the yard next to us, we had, there was like a rock pile, this big rock pile. I think where they had once cleared the field or something. And so I used to spend hours out there making a house out of the rocks. Like, this would be the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
This is the bedroom, and I spent a whole afternoon out there just playing on imaginary home.
Mm-hmm.
I really had a thing about wanting to have my own little home and
mm-hmm.
fixing it, and you know, I would imagine people coming in and visiting and all that, you know, and just have my little tea party in my little rock, you know, dwelling that was just basically just the perimeters of what would be a room.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a lot of fun doing that. And my brother John was a good gardener, and we had apple trees next to our house, so I'd go out and pick the apples. My mother would make apple pie. Those were really fond memories, helping my mother make apple pie right from getting the apples off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to the beach almost every day. We lived right near the beach, so you know, I went to the beach a lot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we went to the beach a lot, and I just loved it. It was my favorite, you know.
Yeah.
I just spent a lot of time in the ocean. And so my brother John was a gardener, and I just remember, like, the first time, I can remember the first time of actually getting a vegetable out of the garden, like pulling up the radish and seeing the radish underneath,
mm-hmm.
and like wiping it off and eating it right in the garden, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that was like a miracle.
Yeah.
I was like so amazed. Like, this is where food comes from? Oh my God. And I was just like, it's just like one of my most amazing moments, you know? It's just like, oh my God. And so I had a lot of those kind of influences.
Mm-hmm.
About just the preciousness of life, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the caring about life and the magic of it.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. It makes me understand where, like, some of my things that I love come from.
Yeah, yeah.
This one's sort of like the other question, but... Can you tell me about one or two people that you remember that were particularly kind to you in your life? And if they were here, what would you say to them?
For some reason, that makes me want to cry.
Aww.
I think it's because I don't take well to kindness.
Yeah.
Like, I want to... I want to always be kind, but for somebody to be kind to me is very difficult for me to handle or to accept.
Right.
For some reason. And Jim Crumb was really kind to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember I was on the front porch over in Westwood. In the co-housing community, and we were just kind of lucked out to be able to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just on the front porch one day crying, and I was crying a lot during that time because I was kind of running on automatic because I was going to court, and I don't remember exactly what was going on at the time, who I was fighting for in court or with in court, but I guess it was probably Richard. And about, you know, custody and abuse of Angel, but we lucked out being able to live there, and I was really grateful, and but I hadn't really connected that well with people in the community, but sort of had. But I was just sitting out there crying, and he walked by, and he lived there, and he was like, he just sat down on the porch and, you know, just listened to me crying, tried to comfort me, and he became my friend. And he was just particularly kind. He went to all the, yes, he did, it was during that time, because he went to all the team meetings with me to be my support person. He went to court with me to be my support person.
Yeah.
He bought that house over there on Westgate to hopefully let me be able to buy.
Right.
And I think he even bought me a used car at one point. I mean, he was just being extremely generous and trying to be helpful with the kids. And he was very, very kind and really didn't expect anything in return. He just wanted to be kind. And if he was here right now, I would just tell him thank you. You know, I've often thought I want to get back in touch with him again. I did see him a few years ago. I happened to be able to coordinate that I knew he was here at Asheville and I was here at the same time. We met at the Laughing Seat and had lunch, but it was a little bit awkward. Because toward the end of our interaction before he moved, I was sitting on the front porch of the Westgate house one day, and I would think it was when Corinne lived there.
Yeah.
It was during that time, and he came by, and he was, you know, trying to help with something, because he had fixed the house up so it would be, have the room downstairs for Abel and stuff. He had that all done, and he just out of the blue said, you know, I just realized I'm in love with you.
That's hard.
And it was really, really hard because I didn't know what to do. I just cried. I don't know why. I just cried. And it wasn't the reaction he was looking for.
Yeah. I remember something about him confessing his love to you. And
yeah.
It was awkward after that.
And so, it was just, you know, so I think, you know, I would tell him that I would have reconsidered. I would have reconsidered,
mm-hmm.
and from my experiences since then, I would have reconsidered, actually, for him to become more intimately involved with him.
He was a lot older,
if
right?
I could go back in time. Yeah, he was a lot older. It wasn't so much that he was a lot older, although I'm sure that had part of it, because I was still kind of young at the time. I mean,
right.
I was in my 30s, probably mid-30s, I guess, maybe. Let's see, because Angel... let's see, Abel, Corinne, I don't know, you know, Abel was maybe 16, 17, right?
I think he was 15. Yeah.
So, yeah, and then that's, like, how many years ago? Like, so I'm 63 now, so maybe getting close to 40.
Yeah.
And Jim Crum was probably 60.
Yeah, that's a lot older.
It was a lot older.
Was he a widower?
No, he was divorced.
Okay.
But his wife was always jealous of me because he was so giving to me, and though we weren't involved at all. And so when his wife divorced him, she made him sell that house to give him some of the money that she owed. So that's how we lost that house.
Oh, wow.
I would be in a whole different situation right now if I was able to buy that house, and it hurts me whenever I think about it.
Yeah.
But, I might have said I would have reconsidered. And it wasn't so much his age. It was just a couple of habits that he had that bothered me. I have really strange... I get irked about certain people's habits.
Yeah.
Like, there might be little tiny things. Like, he was always flicking his nose, his nostrils, you know? And I just...
stand
every time he flicked his nostril, I'd just be like, oh, my God. You know?
Probably something you could have worked on.
I probably could have worked with it, you know? Looking back now, you know? I have compromised on much greater things.
Is he still alive, or did he die?
I think he's still alive. I mean, he was when I saw him at Laughing Seat. So, I mean, he had married, though. He married a lady, but he wasn't happy in the marriage.
Mm.
He had met somebody, like, online or something, and they started dating, and then she was like, you know, marry me or else, and I think he married her.
Yikes, that's never a good way to get married. What advice would you give your teenage self?
Oh, my God.
Probably a lot of advice.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, you know, if I could only go back in time, I would have, like, and I'm just saying this the other day, you know, I don't know, because I think about this and I think, well, if I had actually followed this advice that I think I probably should have followed or, you know, gone that way, I don't know how my life would be.
Right.
It might not be as full as it is now, although there is quite a bit of, you know, sorrow.
Might not be as full of children.
Yeah, definitely probably wouldn't be as full of children. But I think I probably would have, like, not been so rebellious against society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have, I would tell myself to get an education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just bite the bullet and do it, you know, whether it seemed like bullshit to me or not.
Right.
Just to go ahead and get an education and follow it from there. Because I remember when I was in junior high school, the junior high, we went to the high school to see what they were offering for classes. And there actually were some classes like pottery and art that was nothing like we were getting in junior high school.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's like, well, just crap in junior high school. The only classes I liked was English. So I liked to read and I liked to write. Everything else was just crap to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have said to go ahead and continue on to school. I think I would have had a whole different direction had I gone through high school.
Right.
You know, if I had just hung in there for that. So,
when did you even start high school, or what happened?
No, I left school in seventh grade.
Wow.
Yeah, I could tell the story.
I mean, yeah.
I my friend Verna and I, and every girlfriend that I had, my brother Mike, who was like 2.5 years older than me, maybe more, maybe three, my brother Mike, who's passed away now, who's my closest sibling, and he, believe it or not, was going to be a priest at one time. He was like a little chubby boy that wanted to be a priest, but he ended up being this hot teenage dude. Who looked like Robert Redford,
uh-huh.
And all every girlfriend I ever had had the hots for him, and so they became more like in hanging out with me in pursuit of him rather than my friend, which was really kind of difficult.
They're kind of using you,
but I could see it coming every time, uh-huh. You know. So Verna was actually like a year older than me, and she took to me so she could get to Mike, and he ended up getting this really cool SS-396, you know, bright blue sports car, you know. So
how
that
did
was
get
the,
that.
I don't know what he was doing for work at the time, but he, you know, he was a smart guy. I mean, he was very, my brother Mike is very intelligent, and he could have been a history professor. He was just like, his memory, oh my God, just, you know, his details, and he was still, until the day he died, really into history.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyways, he had this car, and so that was like the hottest thing. All the girls really wanted him then, you know. so Verna and I hung around a lot, and we were crossing the bridge by in between Groton and New London one day. Often there was like an accident or something in that area, and the bridge traffic would be tied up. And so Verna and I were in the car with Mike. Of course, she's in the front seat. I'm in the back. You know, he's driving, and there's a standstill traffic thing in the middle of the bridge. So we had a Frisbee in the car, and we got out, and we started throwing the Frisbee, like, you know, on the top of the bridge, you know. It's just like the coolest thing. We thought, this is great, you know. And so these hippie dudes in a van up ahead, really, you know, like to me, like gods, you know. I'm like, you know, all the hippie dudes, I just thought, I don't know if it's from my Christian upbringing or right, if they had long hair and a long beard, they were like Jesus, you know. So I'm like, all these cool hippie dudes, you know, they get out and they're playing Frisbee with us. And I think they were liking Verna more than me. She was certainly a lot more shapely than I was. It took me a long time to shape out. In fact, I don't think I ever got any hips or anything, you know. But she was like, you know, really perfect tan skin, blonde hair, you know, just really gorgeous. And so I think they took a liking to her, and they gave her their number and their address. And so when I decided I was leaving home in the seventh grade, I gave them a call.
God, so you were, I mean, what's that, 12 years old? That's 12 years old.
So you can see why I wasn't that outraged. And I was like, that's how it goes. You know, 12 years old. Yeah, you decide to climb out the windows in the middle of the night. That's what you do, you know.
So crazy. 12 years old. I just think of, well, I mean, Naomi, when I see her, was 12 years old. She was still a little child.
I know. I was just really, I don't know what. So anyways, I left home, and I...
Was it about your stepdad or your mom, or what? Why?
My mom and my stepdad were still together. My sister Kathy was still in the house. My brother Mike was still in the house. We had sold our home. My mom sold our home that she had gotten paid for when my dad died on the job. you know, and she ended up selling it to move into an apartment and use the extra money to help my stepdad pay for his back child support.
Oh my God.
So we ended up in this apartment complex, like brick buildings that were four units, you know, two downstairs, two upstairs, not in a bad area. It was near the beach and stuff, but still, it was nothing like having our home. And we, so anyways, I just decided to leave. I mean, I just decided, my stepdad at that point become like not relevant in my life. You know, he was just there. I didn't listen to him. I practically didn't see him, you know, if I saw him in the house or whatever.
Were you still going to school at that point?
Yeah. But I just decided to leave. Like, I just said, oh, I met these hippie dudes. They live in Providence. You know, it's like an hour away. I hitchhiked there. And I went,
You and your friend or just you?
Just me. And I think I had called them. They said, yeah, sure, come. I didn't look 12 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was probably like almost 13. I don't remember the exact timing of it, but, you know, it was like, and I never stayed back in a year. And I was doing well in school, but I just, I hated school. I thought it was a waste of time, and I just wanted to live life. And so I hitchhiked to Providence, and one of the guys picked me up, and I remember, like, I slept in one of the guys' beds, and they were in their mid-20s, and evidently, I think I probably told them I was 15, 16, I don't know how old I told them I was, and nobody made a move on me, not one of them. There was four guys, and none of them made a move on me. They were all very respectful, and we would ride our bikes all around town together. They had an extra bike, and we would ride down to this nice huge park, you know, in the middle of Providence, and we just had a great time, you know, come home, we'd play games, you know, play frisbee in the park, you know, it's just like, wow, this is cool, yeah, this is what kind of life I want, and I think we were smoking pot at the time, I was already vegetarian, and I was doing some meditation, you know, I was kind of into that whole, like, alternative stuff already, So, little to my knowing, we sat down to watch TV together one night, and where the news came on, and there was a picture of me on the screen. My mother had, I was missing.
Right. Yeah, you're only 12.
Yeah. My mother put my picture, you know, missing, maybe in danger, get a picture of me, and the guys were like, holy shit, you know? And I was like, oh, yeah, well, your mom doesn't know who you are. You're only 12 years old or whatever, you know. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess that's right. Sorry, guys. Well, we can't have you here. Do you understand what we do here? I said, no, I don't. Well, they open up the freezer, and it's full of, like, dope, all kinds of drugs.
Oh,
like, they
God.
Were dope dealers. I mean, not bad dope dealers, but that was, like, bags of pot, bags of acid. You know what I mean? Just, like, all kinds of, like, it was not, like, you know, heroin
right.
and crack and all that bad stuff they have now. But it was all this, you know, they were going around selling acid and pot and
right.
hashish and everything every day, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we were doing on our bicycles in the park.
Oh, my God.
And I had no clue. I had no clue what was going on. They just kind of, I don't know why, if they meant to, not for me not to know, maybe, because...
Yeah.
You know, I was new to the circle or whatever, but I was just plain oblivious because I tend to be oblivious about a lot of stuff. But they were like, we can't take this chance. You have got to go home. So they put me on a train home. They said, you call your mother right now. Let's go to a payphone. So I called her and I got on the train home. And when I got home, like I was already like, I thought I was like a woman of the world bodhisattva. Right? I thought I was like this bodhisattva. I had just been on my spiritual journey, right? And so I get home, and my mother's got my mother and my stepfather and my sister, and I don't think my brother was there for this, police officer, but more...
The truancy officer from school?
Yes.
Yeah,
no, it was like a what do you call them? Not the police officer, but the ones, I can't think of the word right now, the big hats, like a...
State trooper?
Yeah, like a state trooper or something was there. And then they decided they were going to take me to my doctors. The doctor that was like my primary care physician as a child, Dr. Ford. And they were going to, like, figure out what was wrong with me. And And so I'm sitting there. I get up on top of, we had this stereo that was like you open up the top of it and it's got the record player inside, you know, and it's got the speakers built into it. It's like a table in itself. So I'm sitting on there in the lotus position, right? And I got like, you know, seriously in the lotus position, like with my fingers doing the little mantra thing, you know, and I'm like talking to them, trying to give them guidance.
Hilarious.
I you do not understand. I am just... Can you picture Jun Lee? I'm like, you do not understand. I am just wanting to live my life. You know, I'm like this, right? And I'm thinking I'm doing like, you know, I'm doing really good here. You know, I'm going to get them to understand that they don't have to worry about me. I'm perfectly fine. Well, they thought I was like tripped out on acid, that I was out of my mind. I'd become delusional. So they put me in the nut house. And that state trooper followed him there and everything to make sure I got there. And they put me in Norwich Hospital, which now has been completely demolished. I mean, when they went through the mental health reform, that was one of the first places to go because it was a horrendous place. One of the places like from one of the Kukunets, you know. But in the ward that I was in, there was mostly teenage runaways. Mm-hmm. But there was certain girls that had major issues. But it was an experience for me. They tried to put me on medication, but I was smart enough to like just put it under my tongue and then spit it out. Mm-hmm. They weren't smart enough to notice at that time.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't take any medication and I just looked at it as another experience. I was there for like 2 months, and by the time I got out, and I was like, to me, my role there was to be a counselor to all the other girls.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, you know, you're beautiful, you're good, don't worry, you'll be fine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That, so it wasn't a bad experience for me.
They weren't trying to give you electroshock therapy or anything like that.
No. And we got to go outside and we were walking through the garden. And I mean, it wasn't so bad. It didn't scare me. I just was pissed off, you know, that I couldn't be free at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got out, my school didn't want me.
Oh, because you had been there.
Yeah, I was labeled a nutcase,
yeah.
And I hadn't been out, so that's how I got out of school. That's the story.
It was a Catholic school, right? Or
no, it was public school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So your mom,
but
your
the school
didn't
want me
to...
anyway. The school didn't want me anyway because I would go to school and I would bring bubbles with me. When the teacher turned around, I'd be blowing bubbles and making everybody laugh, you know. Or I remember one time, or several times, I would walk from my apartment. The school was right through the woods, so I would walk through the woods. I would wear a long t-shirt and my underwear and nothing else, like, you know. And so there was I was rebelling against the dress code. Constantly rebelling against dress. They would say no bell bottoms. I'd wear huge bell bottoms with patches all over them, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
whatever. I was just constantly rebelling, so they didn't really want me before that either.
So but your mom didn't try to make you go to a different school, like, it just wasn't...
No, she was just like, after that I moved in with my brother John.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved out.
And she didn't try to fight you on that. It was just, she just let you do it.
She just let me do it. Yeah, I mean, I think she kind of felt like I was going to do whatever anyway.
Right. Well, I guess she was probably right. We are running low on time, so I guess we'll just do a couple more questions and maybe we'll do a second one. I don't know.
Oh, it's just the time here.
Yeah. I don't know if we should end on this one. Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life?
Oh, I think I spied
that. You want to skip that one? The other one's not so... The next one's not so great either. Can you tell me about the dumbest thing you ever did in your life?
Oh, what was the first one?
The first one was, can you tell me one of the most difficult moments in your life?
Yeah, I can tell you that.
Okay.
One of the most difficult moments in my life was when, and this is a difficult one to talk about,
mm-hmm.
Was when I went to it was a campground in Rhode Island, pick you and your brother up, you and Abel up. And Jim said that I couldn't pick you up. And that he was going to take you, drive off in the camper with both of you, and there's nothing I could do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of details to that about, you know, the things that happened with that, but I ended up begging him to bring me with him. and all that whole time surrounding that particular event, there was something that happened to me during that particular time that really made me feel completely powerless. I felt.
I mean, you know what it was, or you don't know.
Well, it was just the whole circumstance, how the circumstance was situated, how he managed to manipulate the situation,
mm-hmm.
put me in a position of powerlessness, or that's what I assumed. I mean, it really seemed like there was nothing I could do, because he had disappeared, I was at that time the one of the most difficult moments of that situation was when I had gone to. And he was grabbing Abel, and I was trying to get Abel away from him. It was just like this tug of war with Abel, and I just said, I'm not going to do this to Abel.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ran outside, and I hid in the under a trailer that had hay in it. And, I mean, I was like lost. I was just like, I don't know what to do. So I just hid under this hay, and then he just disappeared with you and Abel, and drove off. And he was gone for 5 days. And during that 5 days, he went to Rhode Island people and said that I was crazy and I was danger to you guys. I was driving crazy and that he needed to get temporary custody. And so that gave him the power. And it was illegal for him to do that because I already had custody in Connecticut and I was coming to get you because I had that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know it was illegal. I didn't know anything about the system. So as far as I was concerned, you know, he had the right to just leave with you. In fact, when I screamed, no, you know, call the police or something. He can't take off with him like this. I have custody in Connecticut. They called a police officer, and he came, and he looked at the paperwork. And he said, no, his paper's newer than yours. The police officer didn't even know that it was legal what he did. So, yeah, he can leave. So at that point, I just begged him to take me with him. And it was the last thing in the world I wanted to do.
By that point, you were pregnant with Jade, right?
Because
from that point, weren't you trapped with him, and then you were pregnant, and then you were on bed rest?
I was pregnant, yeah.
And you came back to him?
Yeah, I was pregnant.
Yeah, that sounds very difficult.
It was a very bad time. I mean, you know, then I went into kind of like a state of denial and acceptance and just kind of made it through. But that whole situation, because I was trying to empower myself, you know, empower the situation, and I ended up just powerless. So that was a very, very difficult time.
Yeah, but it felt like the only way you could be with your kids.
Yeah, I couldn't take a chance.
We don't have very many minutes left, but let's do something positive. Are there any positive moments or memories from your life that you think shaped who you are today?
I don't know. When I try to think about that, I think probably, I think about getting my degree, even though it hasn't really benefited me, like, as far as work goes or whatever. I think that it helped me believe in myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first went back to school, I was like, my brain just doesn't work. There's no way I'm going to be. And then I ended up being, like, you know, straight A student on these lists and everything. And I'm like, wow. Gosh, not only does my brain still works, it works pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's amazing, especially considering how many years you hadn't been in school.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I really didn't expect, I struggled with algebra, but other than that, you know, I enjoyed it, and I did well, and so I was very proud of that, and I think that kind of helped me feel as though, you know, I'm not as crazy as some of my life circumstances may have it look like. It might look like, you know,
yeah.
But actually, you know, I'm functional. I'm actually pretty functional.
Yeah.
You know, and could, you know, do something significant if I had the wherewithal or the resources, time and energy to do it. You know, maybe I could do something significant, even though my self-esteem is still so low that it's very difficult for me to embark on anything new, you know, with any sense of confidence. So that's, you know, I can have the degree, but still, you know, it doesn't mean much without that confidence that should come with it, you know.
But it did give you more confidence than you had before.
Just within myself,
yeah.
Not necessarily out in society.
Right,
but within
right.
myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe we should Wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Thank you for talking to me about so many good memories and stories, and really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm surprised I can, like, remember things. So
yeah, you still have a very vivid memory. All right. How do you close it out?
I have a memory of you. I just remembered a memory of you that is very precious to me, that really stands out, is when you and Julia were doing your performance.
Oh, yeah.
For the Cyril Circus.
Uh-huh.
And the way that your voices and just your whole thing in your performance was just so outrageously, like, otherworldly, like, beautiful, awesome, you know, unimaginable. I was just like, oh, my God, this woman is my child.
Aww.